Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hope everybody's doing well today. I want to welcome everybody to the Unimpressed Podcast today. And today we have a special guest on the Unimpressed Podcast, comedian, actor, writer, Mr. Mark Schiff, talking to me from Los Angeles, and longtime entertainment business guy. And I'm unimpressed. I haven't met him until now. So welcome, Mark. How are you doing today?
Thank you, John. I'm okay. I'm out in Los Angeles here. I just had to climb over a couple of homeless people to get into the studio here, but all is good. I'm going to bring them out some chopsticks and some sirloin tips. I want to keep them around. You know what I mean? They keep the crooks away. They see a lot of homeless in front of my house. They figure this guy's got nothing, so then the crooks don't come.
I've lived in L.A. I lived in Brentwood. What part of L.A. do you live in currently?
Obviously, the bad part. Actually, a very good area. I'm two blocks out of Beverly Hills. It's Los Angeles, but it's in between Culver City and Beverly Hills. My kids live 5 minutes from me in Beverly Hills, so you can walk there.
So you born in the Bronx?
Hatched in the Bronx. I was born there, lived there for 9 years. I learned to deal with the streets in the Bronx. You know, I never played in a park. I only played in the middle of the street. Half my friends were run over, but they were good games. Yeah. You want to know something?
Yeah.
I can hit because we used to play in the middle of the street. We would play stickball or baseball. I learned how to hit a ball exactly straight without it curving off and breaking a window. Because you had two apartment houses on both, one on each side, and you had the street in the middle, and you had to learn how to hit a ball in exactly a straight direction. Otherwise, you'd crack a window or hit an old lady in an ice cream cone.
I mean, that's an interesting take. I've never heard that analogy before, but I guess if you didn't want to get in trouble, I guess you had to learn how to hit it the right way.
It's quite a skill to be able to direct the ball in one direction only.
And I want to, you know, I like to interview people from the foundation up, kind of digging your head and what's going on. And you've been in entertainment business a long time, been a comedian for a long time, been all these titles for a while. What is your position? What is your mindset now after looking back at some of the things you did in your career?
That's a good question. My mindset looking back, I'm very pleased with what I've done. And I'll tell you one reason in particular. I have worked in show business almost my entire life. I've earned a living starting 5 years after I got in as a stand-up comedian. I started in around 1976. Around 1980, 81, I started earning some dough, and I've never not earned money, and I've been able to support myself for over 40 years in show business. That is a major accomplishment because, you know, 99% of the people that come in have to have day jobs and support themselves, so I'm very blessed. I also started with a great group of people, so we all learned from the ground up, like Jerry Seinfeld, a guy named Larry Miller, Paul Reiser. We all started, you know, Richard Lewis, Andy Kaufman was around, a lot of people. So I had a lot of people to learn from, and it was all good.
Now, when you get looking back and you look at that circle, it's very hard to make it in comedy. It's probably the hardest genre of entertainment to make it in. And, you know, I look at it, I was the guy, I was the disruptor from a business standpoint, you know, because in New York, if you want to be a comedian, they teach you, all right, you need to start gigging, you know, five shows a week, whatever. And you compare that to the opportunity you have with social media today. You know, when you show up for these shows, you know, people really don't know when you first starting out, really, people don't really know who they're coming to see. So they don't know if their sensibilities are going to be attracted to the tone of the comedian. They may not like the comedian's narrative. So if you have 50 people in a room at your first show, right? Let's say you pull three people out of there that likes what you're delivering. You know, the growth of building a career in comedy, doing that 5 days a week, and you may pull two to three fans each show starting out, that's why it takes a long time for comedians to build. You know, we kind of accelerated that process using social media. Looking at that group you just mentioned, what did that look like to give you an opportunity to make money as quick as you did?
Well, it took me 4 or 5 years. So we were all, let's call it nursery school. You know, we started just like you start nursery school with a bunch of people that don't know anything. Jerry Seinfeld, Paul Reiser, all these guys, we all started together. And none of us had ever done this before. It was just a dream that we had to do this. And it wasn't 5 days a week. It was 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And we would go on anywhere we could possibly go on. Doing that, if you have any talent at all, you will get better at it. Some of these people on social media, they get very famous, very quick. Got a, you know, a lot of people around, but they can't carry a show. Can't carry a whole show. There's a lot of downtime in their show. And they also play now to their group, these new comedians. And some of them are tremendous, but they have their group that come. Outside of their group, people don't seem to understand them. I come from a universal group of entertainers. All we cared about was making everyone laugh, not just our. We didn't have a group. Mm-hmm. We wanted to get every single person, whether they were a white-collar businessman to a garbage man to, you know, a sharecropper from the set, whatever it was. In order to play Vegas, which was our dream back then, not the Catskill Mountains, but Vegas, you had to be universal. You had to grab everybody because Vegas, everyone was coming from every single different point in the country.
When you say universal,
group, you were not going to meet your group there.
I mean, that's a good analogy, good breakdown. And when you say universal, do you think you had to work harder to pick those spots to make your set universal to kind of round off a position for everybody? What does that look like for you from a creative standpoint?
I have an eye for understanding somehow humanity. And what generally irks me irks other people. So when I put my thumb on that, then I'm usually pretty good chance it's going to work. Maybe, you know, with stand-up comedy, when you create a bit, 90% of the stuff you create is right in the garbage can. It just doesn't go. But that 10% is cream right at the top of the, right up there. So yeah, universal. I don't, also, my group doesn't talk about their lives in like, this is what happened to me and how hurt I was. And we just talk kind of, you know, my mother this, my father this, my kids, my grandmother. It's, you know what I'm saying? It's.
Yeah, I mean, do you think we should kind of digest that and maybe make things a little bit simpler? You know, I mean, I'm the guy who actually, you know, you talk about the social media. I'm the guy who broke in 2016. I was the trailblazer who started the whole, you know, social media deal. I just, because I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I rented a venue. I would sell my own tickets. I would market the show. And then I had a guy who has kind of an almost a natural deal going on, because I always looked at him and he could turn a thought very, very fast. Didn't really prepare, but could just get on it, you know, could get on stage and have a rolling set. Right. And the chemistry worked. Okay. I didn't know what I was doing. I did business how I thought I knew how to do business in comedy. Find out that was backwards, because I kind of reversed engineered the whole thing. And you look at preparing, is there that within that group preparing,
yeah,
was there anybody that had a natural tick? It was my understanding that Seinfeld would, you know, really, really study his lines and so forth.
Yeah. Great. Okay. So we're all writers. The guy that rolls along, I write every day. I just wrote a book, stand-up comedy. I would tape my act at the club, then come home and go over the tape and take out what was not working and what was in working. And it was all typed into either computer or, when I first started, a typewriter, wrote by hand. Jerry writes in yellow legal pads. I've been on the road with him. I was just with him this week. We played 14,000 people.
Wow.
And he has yellow legal pads that he's writing in all the time that he has in front of him. Let's say we're backstage in the green room and I go, I'll see you in a little while. I'm going on. And he'll say to me, don't screw it up. All right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just joking with me, of course, you know, I look at him and he's going over a yellow legal pad, looking at the jokes he's going to put in there.
Did you learn a lot from him?
You know, the guy's brilliant. He's a comedian and he's a mentor as far as watching someone construct and dedication. His dedication. He's a scientist, you know, I mean, I've seen Jerry search for one word for a routine for 6 months to try to find the right word to fit in a routine. This whole thing about people getting on stage with nothing and just rolling is maybe there's one in a billion that can do that. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to perform that same way the next show because you have a different crowd with a different head. But if you got solid material, you can perform it at every show to every crowd. And I do not depend on them for anything. Mm-hmm. I hope they'll laugh, but it's all on me.
Now, do you think y'all kind of were the school of hard knocks for comedy? Do you think we should get back to that to create more value for comedians?
It's still out there. You know, listen, the clubs are filled with young comedians every night practicing rolling from one club to another in New York and out here in Los Angeles. Less so in Los Angeles because it's so spread out. In mm-hmm. New York, you can take a cab from one club to another. Here, from one club to another is a 40-minute drive generally.
Is there anybody that you see today that kind of fits what you saw when you were starting?
I don't know any of the really young guys because I'm not at the clubs that much because I'm working around the country. But these guys are great. You know, Joey Coy is great. There's a woman named Rosebud that's very good, very talented, a writer. She's terrific. I don't know. I can't really. There was a guy. I can't remember. I'm sorry. I think of his name, but just terrific too. There's a lot of good people out there and they're working hard at it.
Do you think what you were doing is somewhat like a psychology about human behavior?
Yeah, you do have to analyze people to some degree. You know, you look at them and you got to figure out. The truth is, if I'm speaking what I'm really thinking and feeling, and they're going to get it. They may not mm-hmm. laugh, but they're going to understand it. I don't try to educate, and I've had this conversation with Jerry and other people. We're not in the education business. We're not trying to teach anybody anything. We're not trying to show anybody how smart we are. We just want you to have a good time. That mm-hmm. is it. If you come and have a good time, then we've done our job. If you come, I'm not a professor. This is not a TED talk. This is not an analysis of my sexuality or why my father fondled me. It has nothing to do. It's just all about making you laugh. You're the most important thing in the room.
Some of those things you just said, you know, a lot of people, I've heard that comedy comes from the darkest places. Would you say, how would you relate that to what you do and maybe to what some of these other guys may pull from? Do you think there's any viability
for
that?
It depends on the person. Listen.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I do routines on my dog. Is that from a dark place? No. You know, I do routines about, you know, getting dog food at Petco. And I do routines about, there's a routine I got about, I dropped off my dog at this place called Cage Free. Everything now is cage free. Cage free chickens, cage free. I dropped the dog off for 4 days, came back to get him. Guy says, I don't know where he is.
Yeah.
So what do you mean? He goes, it's cage free. So that's not coming from a dark place. That's just a funny observation.
Yeah.
My friend gave me, I had a thing about Adderall. There's an Adderall shortage now, but nobody can focus on it. So that's not from a dark place.
Yeah.
But I did have a tough childhood, and I do talk about my mother, and that did come from a fear-based place when I was a child. Mm-hmm. About my mother screaming at me and threatening me, but I've been able to turn it into funny. So the answer is yes and no. Some stuff comes from traumatic places or places that cause a lot of angst, and some stuff, no. Seinfeld's big on observations. He doesn't go deep into the, although he's getting more and more because of marriage. When you're married, you got material for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say when you think about someone's narrative, right, in comedy, it's about simple relations. You just talked about the dog food, and I talk about narratives. I think sometimes narratives have almost hit a ceiling. It's almost like we're trying to make things too difficult, when if we made things a little simpler, that there might be more relatability.
Right. What do you mean?
Well, you're mentioning about, you know, you may be talking about sexuality, someone's this, you know, and they get fixated on a topic, right?
Yeah.
And then they try to dissect that topic, right? Do you think we shouldn't have to dissect those topics and get back to something a little more simpler? You know what I'm saying?
Simpler and universal. I mean, who cares about a guy that, you know, there's a difference between a one-man show and a stand-up comedy act.
Mm-hmm.
a one-man show. He goes deep into the psychology of his life and his this and his sexuality and this. And then stand-up comedy is, you know, people coming out to have a good time. They don't want to be, you know, beaten over the head with your troubles. They get their own troubles. They come to forget their life, not to dig deep into why they're struggling in areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost like you want to take them away from their daily life, right? And get them out of that position. Yeah.
You know, we have people all the time. Being a comedian is one of the greatest jobs. People come over and they say, if only people in life would say the nice things they say to comedians at regular jobs. Mm-hmm. They'll come over and go, you know something? When I came here today, I was not feeling well. I was sad. And you made me feel better. One guy said to me not too long ago, he said, you know, I take heart medicine. I forgot it. You were my medicine today. Mm-hmm. I've had women say to me, you know, my husband died like 4 years ago. I haven't laughed since then. I didn't think I'd ever laugh. And I laughed tonight. Thank you. You know, so that's what it's about. That's
now,
what it's about.
Looking back at your career as well, do you think time has went fast? When you look back and...
Yeah, and when you get older, it always looks like it went fast. You know, when you're like in your 20s, it looks like it's going to drag on for a zillion years. But yeah, it's sped up now, especially. I'll be out of here in 20 years.
you'll be out of here in 20 years?
Probably.
Yeah. Does your mind?
If I'm not, I'll be like, unless I'm lucky, you know, and I'm not just like a dribble addict by then.
Yeah.
But I don't expect to, you know.
You married, kids?
Yeah, I got a wife, 32 years and three boys, all two of them married, one not, all have really good jobs. God willing, when I retire, they'll be able to support me.
And one of the boys then?
What are they, what?
What are your son? You said three boys, right? Three boys. And what do your sons do?
One's an agent, a TV agent.
Okay.
The other is a producer of TV, and the other is in finance.
Let me ask you this. Having kids in entertainment, you being in entertainment a long time, do you think that technology is kind of cutting the cord on positions within the industry?
No, technology is, I mean, glad we have it. It's very important. You got to stay, I'm a little far behind, but it's what it is. You know, the blacksmith had to go.
Because, you know, sometimes those guys and Hollywood guys, they have this, I call it a pattern of business, right? You get in that pattern of business, and because they feel good with that pattern of business, and they feel safe, and they're not looking outside of that lane, and they may be missing some things over here that could actually help them instead of hurt them from their mindset. Do you see anything like that?
I do tweet. I do some Instagram. I do Facebook. I'm not big on Messenger. I'm not big on TikTok. You know, every one of those is a full-time job, and I just don't have it. I have to write, and that's what's important, to keep writing. But I do tweet, and I do Instagram, and I do videos now, especially with my book that just came out. I'm making a lot of videos, trying to get people interested in it. It's a terrific book. People seem to like it a lot. But social media is important. But for the most part, like everything else in life, it's a total waste of your time.
Mm-hmm.
What do I care about the Kardashians and who's screwing who and who's dating who? Why is that my business?
Yeah.
I could spend a whole day troping these people and not get any writing done. Guy called me today, he wanted me to talk about an analysis of Dave Chappelle's Saturday Night Live appearance. I said, I don't have time to analyze it. I got work to do.
You still have when you get up every day, I get up every day and it's like, I got to go. I got to work.
Go.
Work every day. Do you feel that way every day?
Totally.
Because the great ones are like that.
Yeah. No, you got to. What am I going to do? I never watch TV during the day, ever.
Mm-hmm.
Once in a while, and I watch it with my wife only. Otherwise, I don't waste time with that. I try not to do hardly any news anymore. I can't stand it. And I got work to do, and I'd like to do a little more work before I croak. If I had a choice between watching more TV for the next 10 years and then dying, or writing every day for 10 years, I'll take the writing.
So what was the inspiration for the book and foundation of the book?
So the book is called Why Not?
Mm-hmm.
And the subtitle, Lessons on Comedy, Courage, and Chutzpah, Jewish word meaning kind of gall, you know, like take chances with stuff. So why not? In life, two words can change your life. Like when you get married, what two words do you say?
I do.
I do. And that completely changes your life. That means no more sex. No more, you know, it just gets rid of it. No. So I do change his life. So does Why Not. The book came about. There's a guy named David Suisa. He's the head of the Jewish Journal. He called me one day and said, Mark, would you write an article for us? I thought about it. I said, why not? And I wrote it. Then he said, would you write some more? And I said, why not? And then before you know it, I had like 40 essays written for this newspaper. And then COVID hit and I did not want to just sit around getting fat, watching TV. And I thought, maybe I'll write a book. Why not? Mm-hmm. And I wrote the book. Somebody told me about an agent. I said to him, would you read it? He said, why not? I read it. He called me up. He said, I like it. And we worked on it. He said, can I send it to some publishers? I said, why not? He sent it to publishers. This publisher called Apollo Publishers called him and said, we'd like to have a meeting with Mark. He called me and said, you want to meet with them? I said, why not? We had a meeting. Then they called him and said, we'd like to make Mark a deal. He called me and said, they want to make a deal. I said, why not? And I got the book.
So what?
All because I said, why not?
This
book would not be here if I said no thank you the first time.
Hey, that's pretty sharp.
That's exactly what happened. Same thing with this interview with you. They said, you want to come on the show with John? I said, why not?
What? tell me a little bit about where are we directing people with that book? What lane are we sending them down? Where are we going?
Okay, it's 60 essays about. Some about my famous friends or people I've met, like, you know, I mean, my travels with Seinfeld, the stories in there about my experience with Anthony Hopkins, the great actor. I have stories on Anthony Hopkins, Katharine Hepburn, Seinfeld, essays about my growing up, about doing stand-up comedy, my spiritual run, you know, like what I do on a daily basis, on losing weight. I lost 50 pounds and how to keep weight off. I've kept it off for over 10 years. So there's a lot of good stuff in there. And people really, you know, when you talk about Universal, people read my stuff and they say, you know, I just so relate to your writing. Again,
what about
I'm not
your spirituality. What's
so happening? I've always been a believer in God. Never had a problem with it since the day I was born. Never looked back on it. It's always been comforting to me. And I've gone back to temple, back to synagogue. I go there. I have a strong community. Many, many years ago, this week will be 38 years I'm sober. I haven't had a drink. I talk about that in the book, cleaning up my, you know, I used to drink a lot. I was an alcoholic. Stopped that day at a time. So all that's in the book. And it's done with humor and it's touching at times. I got stories about having to put my dog down, you know, what that was like.
With your spirituality thing, do you have a little different approach? Do you have something different that you do on the spiritual side?
So when I wake up in the morning, I do two. I have a thing I do every day. Well, first thing I do every day is when I wake up, I walk the dog and I make my wife breakfast. Mm-hmm. So when you're married, women like to say, you never did anything for me. That's a big thing that women like. You never do a thing for me. So I always do something for my wife right in the beginning so she can't complain that I never do anything for her. So that's taken care of. And then I do TM, meditation. Mm-hmm. So I do it twice a day. I do some set Jewish prayers. And I pray for my family and friends. And then I try to do the hardest thing I have to do for that day first. That's generally the thing I want to do the least. And that's pretty much it. You know,
Do you make a list? Do you make a daily list?
I do the same thing. I have a list of things I need to do, but those things I just mentioned to you are just things I do every day. And if I don't do my little prayers and I don't think about it and pay attention to that, then my day is off a bit. I feel like I've missed something important. I also have besides the book, I have a podcast called You Don't Know Schiff.
You don't know Schiff?
You don't know Schiff, my last name. So, but as far as the, you know, we're talking about the book, all that is in the book. And
how about Katharine Hepburn? Katharine Hepburn, you said? What was your little story about that?
So I worked at a Broadway theater selling candy. You know Gilbert Gottfried? You remember Gilbert?
I do. I know Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah, he passed on not too long ago. So Gilbert and I sold candy at a Broadway theater. We got $7.50 a show. So we're earning like, I don't know, $30 a week. And Katharine Hepburn was in a play with Christopher Reeve, who played Superman. He's gone now, and they're both gone. So one time in the afternoon, she's in the theater walking around, opening these doors, trying to cool off the theater. And I sat there, can I help you? And eventually, she started meeting with us every day for 5 or 10 minutes, telling us stories about Humphrey Bogart, Spencer Tracy. We became friends.
Yeah.
We started helping her with that. And then she gave me a drawing of herself she made, like a hand drawing. And she gave me an autographed book. And she invited me to her house for a party. and told me to call her. This woman won more Academy Awards than anyone in history. Four Academy Awards. I was earning $7.50 a week, and she was paying attention to me. And the reason is, I think she really understood that I was new, I was a young kid, and I was struggling to make something myself. And she befriended me just to kind of tell me that I'm okay. It was a beautiful thing she did, and I'm forever grateful. She didn't have to be that kind to me. So that's what this. Many of the stories about things about kindness, faith in yourself. The thing I'm most proud of.
I think great talent can recognize great talent. There's a different. There's a different tone. There's a different vibe. You think that was the connection?
Well, I think that people can recognize when people are serious and are decent people. I think they recognize that. And that's sometimes there are great artists you don't want to be near because they're just not nice people. Mm-hmm. I'd much rather be near a nice truck driver than some genius, nasty person.
What is your thought process? You know, some of the great ones, you know, I call it the light switch effect, right? It's like, you know, when the camera comes on, it's like you turn on a light switch. You know, for a great artist. But some of those great artists, like you said, off camera, they're a disaster.
Right.
Do you think there's a mental health issue there? What do you think that is? What do you think that's?
I don't know if it's mental health. It's an insecurity that people have. I think it's some sort of fear. That's why people get angry, because they're afraid of something. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it's fear-based, a lot of this stuff. Why people are nasty, I don't think they understand that you can get, you know, there's the old saying, you get more with honey than you can with vinegar.
How do you think those ones in entertainment that kind of have that reputation, how do you think they get to where they got to when they may not be able to treat people the best?
That's a good question. A lot of them have handlers that handle a lot of their nonsense for them. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it catches up with you. I believe that. Ultimately, people hire people because they want to be around that person. Not necessarily. You know, you need people who are talented, very talented, but you don't want to be around people that are just friggin' annoying. I don't know if you have kids, but
I do.
You do. As a parent, I think one of the number one things you want to do, if you're a young parent, listen to this. You want to send the person into the world that is not annoying. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal. It's a terrible thing sending annoying people into the world, because then they just ruin stuff for everybody. I know, because I was very annoying. I was an incredibly annoying child. People used to say to me, "You're the most annoying person I've ever met. I've never met anybody more annoying than you. Why are you so annoying? Stop annoying me." This is what I used to get every day. It made me worse.
Well, I've said this too with other comedians, especially in New York. I've interviewed a couple comedians in New York, and one Italian comedian I was interviewing, you know, he said he would go out there with his cousins, you know, and it'd be him and four others. And he was very auditory type of comedian, where he could hear sounds and repeat the sounds, right?
Sure.
And, you know, the Western world would look at those five kids and say, he's different, there's something wrong, and almost suppress that. And I've thought, maybe if we didn't suppress that and we embrace that, there may be some more special ability there that maybe could help some people. What do you think about that thought process? Because you're talking about, you say annoying, you might have just been the kid that stood out.
I didn't know how to act. Mm-hmm. I was lost in the arena of how to act like a person. I wanted to have friends though so desperately that I used to annoy them into trying to be my friend. I didn't know how to just deal with people. I missed that when they handed out the dealing with people seminar when you were born. I missed that day.
Gotcha.
I'm better at it now. You know, marriage helps you with that.
Well, there's a learning curve, right, in this business. And I had a learning curve, me managing acts. I'm a very black or white type of person. Yes, no. And I have, you know, I work 12, 15 hours a day, and I have so many people coming at me like I'm, you know, like I'm a relative, I'm a father, I'm taking care of them, whatever. And I would just say, yes, no, yes, no. And when I first started looking around and understanding some of the sensitivities and personalities in the room, I look back now and I said, I might have handled certain people differently. And I think that's a little bit of a learning curve in entertainment. And that's something I didn't really pick up on. Probably hurt some relationships at the beginning because I was a little hardcore. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I'm the same as you. I probably hurt a few myself I didn't know how to deal with. So what I do now is when I see people that I haven't seen in a long time, one of the first things I say to them, I almost do it almost all the time, I say, was I nice to you? And if not, tell me, and let me clean it up right now. So I will ask people if I owe them an amends for anything or if I was not decent to them. And it doesn't happen too often, but once in a while someone says, yeah, you know, you look cold or nothing extraordinary. But I like to do that because I like to right the wrongs. You know, listen, the way we were back then, you have no choice but to learn from it and grow from it and not do those things anymore. That's what's great about living a long time. You get to see the mistakes and you can reroute them.
Well, I think growing up in the Bronx, too, is almost survival. You know, it's like, you know, you're talking junk to this one. You're talking junk to that one. You know, mom and dad are talking junk. I mean, it's somewhat of a lifestyle in the Northeast, you know, a little different because my dad was born in Newark on Titchener Street. My mom was from North Carolina. I grew up in the South. I sound like a redneck, but I experienced both worlds. And what I found out is people are the same, right? You may have 10 different types of people out there. When I say makeup, when you look at the Northeast and you add a lot of people, right, compared to another area that may have less people, you kind of perpetuate a little bit to kind of put you in that survival mode, right? I think that was the only difference. It wasn't about these stereotypes that we create from a Western mindset. Does that make sense? You ever thought about that?
Yeah. No, when I was 8 years old, I was selling firecrackers. I mean, yeah, that was pretty advanced for an eight-year-old.
Yeah.
I buy a mat of firecrackers, I think 144 in a mat or something, and then I would sell them for like 10 cents a pack and make some extra money. So I was already like dealing in the street with stuff.
Here's another interesting one. When you say success in the entertainment business and purpose, right? To me, I have enough. I've made money. I'm happy. But now it's about more purpose. How do you define purpose for you?
That's a great question. A life without purpose is not living. That's really, you have to have a life where you know. So for instance, I did not have a primary purpose before I stopped drinking. My purpose was just fool around, meet chicks, do this, blah, blah. And then I stopped drinking. I got sober and I got a primary purpose in life, to stay sober and to help other people to get sober too. And that purpose gave me a direction in life, because every day when I wake up, I know that I'm there to be helpful to people. My comedy, all that stuff is also unbelievable, my writing. But I do have a primary purpose to help people to try to have a better life. That makes a difference.
Now, did your comedy change at all when you stopped drinking?
A lot of people worry, you know, when they stop drinking or doing drugs that they're not going to be funny anymore. No. I went through about a 6 or 7 month period where I wasn't funny. I was just drying out and clearing my cobwebs out of my head. Then after that, I picked up again, and I've never looked back.
How was the family support through the drinking?
Family didn't know anything about it. I wasn't married at the time when I stopped. You know, I was a single guy, and my parents never knew that I had an issue because I never got popped. I never got pulled over. I never got in a car wreck. Never went to a rehab. I just did it until the day I couldn't do it anymore. I was a blackout drinker.
And how much would you drink in a day?
So it became less and less because my body was so filled with the stuff. I drank like a 6-pack of beer and a bottle of wine. You know,
how old were you when you stopped?
I was 31. I was fried. I was fried. I couldn't remember anything. I was blacking out. I was driving drunk.
And did you have any history in the family of drinking?
No. My parents were, never drank. My mother would have a half a glass of wine and go, boy, I'm so hot. And my ears were hot. No, nobody. Really? I didn't. Uncle, I think, just drank too much. But no, it wasn't nothing I could trace. It was me. I was born with a lot of angst, and I need to cool it off. So I found booze.
Do you still feel some angst today?
Yeah, every day. It's part of life.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have stress in life. Yeah. I mean, even though I meditate and do all that stuff, I feel better than I used to. But, you know, as long as you know you're going to die, you're always going to have some angst. Right? I mean, you know, this isn't an angst-free ride here. Once you enter into the world.
So what do you got going on? What do you got going on? You have the book, Why Not?
I got the book, Why Not? And I'm working feverishly on it every day. I got the podcast, You Don't Know Schiff, I'm working on. I got my act. I'm touring with Seinfeld. I was just with him in, where was I, in Reno the other day to 5,000, and in Santa Barbara, California to 5,000 people. And got a book signing tonight. I got my writing to do. So I'm really, and I'm a grandfather now of two little ones, a 2.5-year-old and a 18-week-old.
Nice.
That changes your life too.
What level when you go from... What's the difference from having your own kid to being a grandfather? What's the difference?
Well, everybody says, you know, in some ways it's more fun, the grandchildren, because you don't keep them. You give them back. And you know, you're not going to get stuck for $500,000 probably, you know, in schooling and, you know, so it's kind of nice. You know, you kind of spoil them, then you give them back to the parents. It's tremendous fun. And it gave me another purpose to carry on and try to stay healthy and live longer, because you want to see what they turn these little crazy people turn into.
And so when is y'all going to talking about the family? I'll ask this question. We'll come to a close. I mean, I've enjoyed the conversation. There's a lot of good information, a lot of history, you know, and a lot of value there, a great foundation. I think celebrating that foundation is a big deal. Valuing things is a big deal. Does all this kind of come into one? And I say valuing things and your history and so forth, and you say family. And does this come into one as a linear mindset with family, career, all these things? Do you feel like you came from a different place than, you know, what someone comes from today? And can we get people back to having a rich foundation, having value in them, believing in themselves more? Does that make sense? Is there?
Yeah. Yeah. I came from a much more community spirited world, and I live in it now. There's a lot of these young people, God bless them, but they don't want to have kids anymore. So many of them, they don't want to get married. And those are the things that root you in life. I remember Damon Wayans say to me, you know, I don't trust people that don't have kids. All my friends that are single, never got married, never had kids, they're all friggin' nuts. You know, they're in their 50s, 60s, they're all out of their minds because they didn't have anybody to tell them what to do and direct them at all. They were just like, you know, a rudderless boat, you know, just floating around. And you got to buckle it up, man, when you got a wife and you got kids and, you know, everybody yakking at you and telling you, you know, do this and that.
What would be one piece of advice you would give young people today? Because young people, to me, they seem very, they get very sensitive about very simple things. How can we change that?
Yeah, I know. They're very sensitive. They fall apart if you say something that they don't like. Well, I think young parents have to not coddle their children and not send out into the world, because those people that you're talking about are very annoying people. The ones that if you say one thing, they're like, you know, there's just that's annoying. Those are somebody ought to smack them on the head with a feather hammer. You know, it's like so if you're a young parent, don't coddle them. Let them get hurt. Let them eat some dirt sometimes. Don't wash their hands every 3 minutes. And teach them a value system. These people now, you know, I mean, you know, some of them with the, yeah, I'm fine on my own for the rest of my life. You know, what kind of life is this? I know, at least for me, I don't like being alone. I like being around at least a couple of people I love.
Well, it's good advice. And yeah, I always say this, you know what the most important thing about life is?
Is what?
Is life. The most important thing about life is life.
Living life. I agree with you. Life is exciting.
If you don't have that, you ain't got nothing.
Got nothing, man. Life is very exciting. You just got to get in the game.
Love the conversation. I love the history.
Thank you, Charlie.
Mr. Schiff has a book coming out called Why Not, which I think if you want to hear about some of the original comedians who started in the game and kind of established the game and gave the game value, check out this book because I think it's very, very interesting.
Thank you.
Comedian, actor, writer, Mr. Mark Schiff. And
thank you.
I am John Edmonds Cosma, the CEO of Bang Productions.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.